Hey everybody, Ben Bailey here. Welcome to another fantastic episode of Tall But True. And I never say the tagline anymore, where the tales might sound tall, but they are true.
Yeah, we may have to revisit that.
You used to say it in the beginning all the time, and I just don't do it anymore.
I'd have to say true-ish. I'd have to make it a
true-ish. Yeah, you have to add that in there.
Someone feels like litigating.
I'm your host. My name is Ben Bailey. I'm here with my co-host and good friend, Mr. DC Benny.
Yes, indeed. Good to be here, man. I'm excited about today and today's guest.
We like him. He's a good man. He's a very funny man. He's one of those guys that you meet him and you just know he's a good dude.
Yeah.
Right? As soon as you meet him.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, thanks.
It's funny.
I don't want to be a good guy. I want to be cool. God damn it. It's John Fish, everybody.
John Fish.
Woo! Good to be here.
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I was going to go against type and be angry.
You can do that.
After the intro.
If you want to. He's one of those, he's a good-natured fella. Everybody likes him right off. It's John Fish. And you just go, Fuck you.
Two hacks.
Fuck you, Ben Bailey, you piece of shit. I'm like, okay, we'll be right back. So what's going on, man?
Not much. Good day. Went to the gym, had a bagel.
That's a solid day right there.
Solid expectations, executed plan.
I never sleep well. I heard you guys didn't last night.
Neither of us got slept a great well. Night.
Bailey kept snoring. It was waking me up.
I told him enough.
All the way from here to Brooklyn. What do you do when you go to the gym?
I mostly go to yoga
and
just was not getting any cardio. So I just joined the gym to go on the
Yoga's awesome.
Elliptical.
Treadmill, elliptical.
Yeah, I just do the elliptical for like a half hour.
That's cool.
45 if I'm ever in shape.
You do get yoga injuries, though. That's the thing. I'm still recovering from those twists.
You hurt yourself doing yoga?
Yeah. Oh, dude, man.
You get older, you can hurt yourself anyway. I hurt myself sleeping. Literally woke up, I'm like, how did I injure my back while I was asleep? What the fuck?
Yeah.
I hurt my back while I was watching the World's Strongest Man competition. For real. I sat in a chair and watched like a marathon of it, and I got up. I was like, these guys are lifting cars. I hurt my back watching.
Yeah, I've had my back go out when I brush my teeth, but that's
really?
Just anger. That's just that's repressed anger.
Right,
well, that's what they say is all that stuff is stress. That Dr. Sarnos, I believe
Dr. Sarno. The back guy.
Yeah.
Right.
He thinks it's all in your head.
Rogel and I talk about Sarno.
Oh, Rogel.
Sarno.
Yeah, Rogel read that
not
book.
Talk about that.
Yeah.
He's big on that book, man.
Yeah, he loves it.
That and the quitting smoking book.
Oh, I don't know. Is it the same guy?
Dr. Alan Carr. No, that guy, that's how my wife and I quit smoking. She was smoking since she was 14, and then I'm moving with her, and then I started smoking cigarettes, which I never did. And I couldn't stop. I was like a fucking chimney. And I kept trying to quit. She never tried to quit. But I couldn't because I was living with somebody who smoked. And we tried everything. And we got that book. And the great thing about that book is you can smoke while you read it as much as you want. You can smoke while you read it. And then eventually
that's true for all books, though.
That is true. That is true. But it hypnotizes you to be like, why am I doing this?
And by the end, you just didn't want to smoke anymore.
Didn't want to smoke anymore.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Still smoke weed, but not, you had to take a little break from that to, the process. But,
Yeah.
What kind of yoga did you take when you got injured, though?
I do like some basic, not the hot room one. I can't handle that.
Because the reason why people get injured in the hot is because it really loosens your muscles and you think you can go further than you actually should.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But the other thing is, it's becoming such a fad that people are just going. Like, I know this girl from the coffee shop who just went to Florida to become a yoga teacher. And I was like, so you're really into yoga? She's like, taken two classes in my life.
Oh my God. It's just
a thing.
And then she decided to go be a yoga teacher.
And so, that's who's teaching classes now.
I've gotten some good ones.
There are great teachers, but there are also people that
they suck. You get in one, you're like, oh my God, I got a fucking hour of this, with the Shanti Om Shaka Khan. I got to be out of here. When they suck, but when
that's like a massage. You ever get you guys get
massage?
When you get in there, as soon as they put a hand on you, you know.
Yeah.
You're either like, oh, it's going to be great, or you're like, oh. fuck.
There better be.
How am I going to get through this for an hour? There better be released.
Place on my corner now.
Oh, no way. A good massage place?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Do you have to ask for the same person? Or no, it's like they're all good?
I think there's two, maybe three, and they've all been good.
Is it Asian?
Yo, very.
Look, those guys got it down. I got to say, if a blonde comes out to give me a massage, I'm like, I'm going to be skeptical. I hate to say it. I'm going to be skeptical.
Is it a massage parlor or is it like a massage parlor?
No, it's not. There's
like a legit
two
place.
In my neighborhood that I think are handy places.
Right.
One that's just like, it doesn't even have a sign out front. It just says open.
It just says
lights
just
and
says
it's
hand
always
jobs.
Open. Yeah.
Right.
And the other one, I found out surprisingly that you get a hand job there.
Huh. And you're like,
that's
well,
why I love John.
Good morning.
This is my only time ever that it happened. I think it's the only way I could mentally do it. I don't know if I could.
Right. Planning
go
it to go
well,
in.
You don't
want to
stop it when it's.
Well, there's no massage I've ever had that I wouldn't want one at the end of.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you're always like, if this happened, I'd go for it. And that happened that day. I should have known. I knew it was different when they make you shower first. I was like, I've never had to shower first.
Like, clean up before we touch your privates, I guess.
Right.
It's funny. I've get massage a lot. I always have been big into exercise, working out, whatever. Massage is an important part, especially as you get older. Yes. Yoga's great to stretch, but there's nothing like a massage to relax your muscles and whatever. So I often find myself looking for a place to get a legitimate massage.
Yeah.
And it's not easy.
It's not easy.
It's not easy to find a place, especially if you're on the road somewhere.
Yeah.
You start calling around, people are like, oh, yeah.
You come here before?
Like, I feel like there's probably some Yelp review thing, like code that you would find.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It seems like there would be. But I've never had such luck with that. I mean, I haven't had it happen. I had one girl come in Florida. I have been traveling like crazy. I was doing this corporate gig in Florida. My back was fucking killing me. I was like, I need to get a massage. The hotel was like, we don't have anybody. Just look locally. So I was like, all right. So I called around. I found this girl. She said, yeah, I could come do it. She comes to my room. She doesn't have a table.
Yeah, that's...
And I'm like...
That's an escort.
And I'm like, where are we planning... Where are we going to do the massage?
On my pussy.
And she's like... And she's like, just on the bed. And I'm like, oh, boy. I go, oh, okay.
Oh, shit.
And I go in the bathroom and I change and I come out. I just got a towel. She has her fucking top off. When I come out, she's got her... She has no shirt on. Her
Were
tits
you
are out.
Were you suspicious then?
I was immediately like, you know.
There's something.
But the funny part is I just didn't want that at all. Yeah. I was married at the time. I had no interest in that. And I was like.
Plus she probably wasn't that hot either. So that's the other. Yeah.
She was not particularly attractive.
Yeah, right.
It's like in
and
comedy.
She just had a terrible touch.
Mm. Yeah.
But the funny part about it is I made her give me a real massage. And she fucking hated it. She was miserable. She had to actually
work.
She had to work for it.
Yeah.
It's like in comedy, like when the crowd sucks,
yeah.
That's the only time they needed a stretch.
Yeah.
It's absolutely.
The only time you want a real massage is the only time you can't get
one. It's the only time you can't get one. When I really needed it for my health. Like my back was really fucked up. I made a whore give me a massage.
I guess that's better than the other way.
She hated me for it. Yes, definitely. Forced a legitimate masseuse into, come on, just take care of it. You know you want to.
Oh, that is great, man. That is great. That is fun. You know, did I tell this about my brother in the massage parlor? Did I tell you?
Maybe.
All right.
Well, what happened? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You did. You did. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. So
it's funny. We've been doing the show enough now that we're like, did I tell this already? Yeah. And then we're like, oh fuck. Is it a good story?
Yeah. I took my. I don't know if I already told him. That's how I found out my brother was gay. Was I took him to at the behest of my friend. He was like, take him, because girls would come by and they'd want to date him and blah. And he's like, yeah, he's playing with Lego all the fucking time. So he turns like. 15 or 16, so it's for his 16th birthday. We take him to this massage parlor place, And the lady goes in there, and she keeps coming out. She's like, more money, more money. And I'm like, all right, just it's his fucking birthday. Take it easy. Pay him more money. He take too long. And he was in there for like an hour, and then the way back, I was like, how is it? He's like, eh. And I'm like, eh, I'm going to chick jerk you off and everything. And a week later, he calls me up. He's like, I'm gay. That was just, that's what it's all about.
And, better go tell that day, woman.
Every
she's
time
looking
I see
for
him,
a new
like,
job.
More money. More money.
More
you
money.
Take too long.
More money.
But,
and he's like, you're my son. You're my son. It's another one of his stories that we just heard, which is a great story.
A stalker thing. But,
it's funny, we're talking about shitty college gigs.
Yeah.
I'm sure we have plenty of those.
Oh, yeah.
I was telling one where this other guy, Moody McCarthy, and I went to a college. We thought we were going to be in a big room, but they took us into a study lounge, and we thought we were waiting there to find out where the venue was, but no, it was the show was in the study lounge. So we literally did a full on show for two people in a room with no mic, no stage, no lights, no nothing. And I've had that happen before. I once did a show. I went to colleges are the worst. Have you guys done a lot of college shows?
Oh, I remember though with the same kind of scenario that you had, like, actually going to do a college show, no audience, and they're just like, we're really sorry, but here's your check and see you later. And you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I had that happen too.
I was okay with that. I've never been forced to do an hour for nobody.
I've been forced to do an hour for a couple of people.
Yes.
Maybe five times. Only once did I go and there was no one in the crowd and they just gave me my check and said, you can go. And it's interesting because it's the same factor every time. It's that the people who are running things, the student activities student, didn't promote the show.
Yeah.
Well, some of
so
them
nobody
little,
knew.
You know this kid's going to be a fucking agent. Like, they got the places packed. There's flyers. You see the flyers all over campus. It's the thing. You know, the kid's like, all right, everybody, you know, turn off your phones, blah, blah, blah. You know, this kid's going to be in the business, right? But then there are these other ones that are like, yeah, they just do it.
Yeah.
And they do it to go on to the NACA conferences to go party
and
get away. They don't give a shit who's in there.
Sometimes it's misbooked. Sometimes it's not their fault. You get there and they're like, somebody died last night. Yeah. And you're like,
totally.
But sometimes it's like, it's finals week. So,
so no one
like,
is
well,
coming.
Then why did you do this?
Yeah. There's a movie, there's a free movie being played next door. Yeah, or there's a concert. You know, there's so many different things. I once had one in North Carolina. I drove all the way to North Carolina. I get to the school, and I go in. There's a huge room. It's got about 500 chairs set up. I find the office. I go in. There's this woman sitting behind the desk, and I'm like, hey, Ben Bailey, I'm here to do the show. This is years ago, before Cash Cab or anything. Nobody knew who I was or anything. And she goes, the girl who was supposed to promote it and all, we had a falling out, and and so she didn't really promote it. And then she, on top of that, she sort of told everybody not to come. And I'm like, I just drove 9 hours or whatever, you know. And she goes, but I have your check. And, I'm like, oh, good. And she goes, so let's do the show. And we walk out into this huge room.
And you made her give you a regular massage.
Yeah, right. I should have.
With release.
I had to do the show. I had to do an hour for this woman. And there's a dude in the crowd. I don't know who he was. He's got one of those paddleball games like Steve Martin has in The Jerk. Yeah. And he's just sitting there doing the paddleball thing for like 20 minutes. There's two people in a room that would hold 500. I'm doing my horrible jokes.
Yeah.
Finally, I just walked off the stage and took the paddle ball thing away from him and brought it up and set it on the stool. And I said, you can have it back at the end of the show. And I said, what are you even doing here? He's like he's like a 40-year-old man.
Yeah.
I go, what are you even doing here? He goes, I read in the paper that you were coming. I'm like, are you the only person that reads the paper? I go, so what do you do? He goes, I'm a pig farmer. The guy's name was Joe the pig farmer. I did a show for the student activities woman who had, it turned out later, just broken off her relationship with the girl, the young girl who, so that was their falling out. It wasn't a falling out. They were a couple. And she broke up with the young girl, and the young girl freaked out and told everyone that this woman was horrible and canceled the whole fucking...
Except for Joe
the pig farmer.
Yeah.
One last little bit. At the end of that, she says, okay, I'm going to take you to the motel. And I was like, motel?
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, we drive over there. It's just fucking shithole.
Yeah.
I go, this place. I go, I'm not staying in this fucking place. She's like, what's the problem? I'm like, I don't stay in a place where the door from my room goes right outside.
Right.
I want to have some protection of a hotel. And she goes, well, this is a perfectly nice place. I'm like, this is not a perfectly nice place. I don't call it a shithole, but everything. But
yeah.
Turns out it's her fucking sister's hotel. She goes, well, I'll be sure to tell my sister that you thought her hotel was a shithole. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. I can't get anything right on this gig. It was the worst gig ever, but I got my money and I went home.
I did a gig in a college. This is so quick, but it is college. It was the School of Mines.
Oh, yeah.
Denver or something?
It's Colorado School of Mines.
Colorado
I did
School
that.
Of Mines.
And did you put
outdoors.
A rock up on the mountain?
I don't remember if I did. I think I was supposed to, but the kid who was going to drive me, this kid... made this bong out of a menorah. And multiple people could hit this bong, and it had an electric, it had a little, this kid was like a fucking genius. It had a little fan that would blow through the things that were supposed to hold the candles. They were each.
Each one was a bowl?
A bowl. Or they were each, like, you could hit the menorah.
And as a Jew, you're like, biblically obligated to smoke out of a menorah.
Blasphemously perfect. I'm like, I got to do this. And then we never made it to put the rock on the mountain.
Oh,
so
really?
That's what I remember. Yeah.
That's all I remember about that gig.
Yeah, that's all I remember.
Was that you'd go put a rock up on top of the mountain.
But
how was the show? Was that a good show?
It was, you know, it was outdoors. Those are, I feel like those are so 10% of the time are they okay. It was like, you know,
yeah.
It was during some festivals, so people are walking around completely oblivious. You know, you got to juggle or play music. It's and then the mic was
balloon animals.
Key. Oh god.
Oh, that's the
worst.
Yeah,
I needed that menorah hit after that fucking thing. That's all I know.
And the weed lasted 8 days.
those colleges are.
They can be terrible. Now they're better, thank God. If I do one now, it's pretty good. Usually, it's the big venue and it's fun. But for years, I did terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I sold the most I had T-shirts at one.
Oh,
point.
You did T-shirts?
I had T-shirts.
What
before
did they
I had
say?
An album. Go fish.
That's awesome.
Jamie Lisso gave me that idea.
That's great.
Well, we were doing those Nobodies of Comedies tours. I don't know if you remember this guy, Mike Mills, out of Albany, Schenectady area. He did all sorts of theater shows, and he put together this Nobody. Everything but the name was wonderful. Like we did these theaters, but they called us the Nobodies of Comedies, and would be like four or five of us would be like me and Josh Sneed and. I think I did one with Russ Meneve and
nice. Both
yeah,
good
Lisso,
dudes.
Andy Campbell.
Two more good guys.
That guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's great.
Campbell.
It's
yeah.
Really interchangeable.
It was great.
There's so many nobody.
Yes.
So many unknowns. Yeah.
It just sucks when you're like doing them for like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Just change the name to
but
somebody's.
Sneed started a T-shirt company.
Yes,
but
he
would make
in
a
Cincinnati.
Killing and stuff. And so he was like, you got to do it. And so it was before I had an album. So I did it. But I'm just not good. It's my personality is not good for selling. So I would just have them. But
right, you
night,
wouldn't push it. You just have them there.
But
yeah.
Brewer, I was opening for Brewer at a
nice.
College. And he didn't have anything for sale. And just like halfway through his thing, he was just like, I don't know why it came up. But he was just like, yeah, you guys should buy John's T-shirts. I don't have anything to sell. And I just sold everything that I had.
Wow,
yeah,
that's
just
awesome.
Just because he said
incredible.
That.
That's great, man.
That's incredible. It's such a whole different thing to be able to sell.
Yeah.
Like the, you know.
I feel like guys are like one end of the spectrum or the other.
Yeah.
Either you don't really even say anything or you go too hard. Like some guys, their last 3 to 5 minutes is about how they have kids who need to eat.
Yeah.
And like, you're like, oh, for Christ's sake.
How many times have I seen that shit on the road?
Oh, it's the worst. It's I'm like, how do you do
flea
it?
Flea market
man?
Out there.
Yeah.
And that's the best jokes in the act, too. I'm like, that's the funniest part of the fucking act.
Yeah, it all goes into the sales
with
pitch
yeah,
at
with
the end.
Yeah, with the DVDs, and as you could buy the DVD sale pitch and the fucking yo-yo, and then. You go out there and their whole thing's packed. And I'm like, I have a CD. I don't know if they even play those any. Do you have a thing to play anymore? Yeah, but I have never been good at that. I try.
Never enjoyed.
I can sell
that
your stuff. Like
yeah.
if we were on the road together, I'd be like, "Get his." Yeah,
I could do
but
yours.
Me,
that's the same.
No.
But it's your own stuff. Yeah.
Ugh. I've tried. My wife's like, "You gotta get better at that. You're not being." And I haven't figured out what it is. I've actually had guys. You know, when you sit in a row when. The middle or the opener, they have their shit because I'm not an asshole and I don't say the middle or
right,
the,
of course.
Can't sell their shit. I like it when they sell it next to me because it feeds the whole thing. So I watch the guys who do really well and I have them, I'm like, can you watch me? And they're like, I just can't figure it out. You just suck at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Your heart's not in it.
I don't know.
You didn't get into comedy to be a salesman, right?
I mean, I thought it would be different like when I transitioned from t-shirts to an album because it's like, oh, I'm proud of this album.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But no.
No, it's still, it's just, it's too full on whoring yourself.
Yeah.
You're pushing
and I, yeah, I don't want to talk to them.
It's not hidden.
Yeah,
it's not.
I don't want to talk to them after.
You know, I don't mind talking to them anymore. I used to not like it. I used to hide.
To be fair, I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just them. It's just people.
Yeah. I want to have my it's done. We've had our interaction. Maybe a little later I'll see you at a bar. Hey, that was funny. Like,
yeah.
Or you suck. And then I want to fucking stab you. But, you know, just... It's like, I'd like to have the space afterwards, you know?
I just, it's like this thing that they think you're a comic and whatever they have in their mind of what a comic is, they feel like that's how they can talk to you.
Yeah.
Like, my Facebook wall, I don't give off the vibe that you should use the C word on it, but I had some friends from high school just dropping the C-bomb on my wall. My, like...
You
family
can say cunt
looks
on the
that.
Show if you want.
But that's the thing. Like, I don't even say it, really.
When you could, you don't want to. Yeah.
So
I don't either,
like,
but.
It's, you know, it's like that word. Kind of thing where they, like, come up to you and tell you the filthiest thing or, like, tell you to fuck off or whatever. And they think it's funny and you're just like, no, I don't.
Something horrific. Yeah, we mentioned this.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We talked about it on one where people just come up and they don't know what to say. They just want to say something.
Yeah. And it's
so
just
they
stop.
Just end up
don't
saying
say
the dumbest thing or the most offensive thing you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And you're like, why?
Or they're so surprised that you're not going out to do coke all night.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Where are you going out? I'm like, I'm pretty tired. I got up at 6. And they're like, oh, come on, man.
To do your stupid
do you
town's
girls
radio.
Like have you met girls in comedy like that like have had relationships through being a stand-up comic? You know?
Yes.
Relationships with people from like
I'm just saying,
audience
like,
members?
Because you're a comic and because you're out there and people, you know how people see you in a certain light because you've performed. It's not like meeting somebody the regular way, like at a bar.
No,
or
it's
whatever,
very different. Yeah.
You know, so there's a kind of an expectation or whatever. But have you, like, how does.
I think, like, one comes to mind that was good.
Uh huh.
And I think it was because it was like a cellar kind of thing where like I ended up doing most of my interacting upstairs at the Olive Tree with this person. Her friend was actually crushing on like I think Mulaney or Julian McCullough or something. And so she kept dragging her friend who I ended up with to these shows and we would sit upstairs and talk and, you know, and it blossomed that way. So it wasn't just from...
Gotcha.
The comedy part.
Right.
But it was from the comedy.
Uh-huh.
So I guess...
feel like, you know, a lot of guys would be like, oh, yeah, I get laid a lot. I get a lot of action from being a comic. But I feel like you don't often hear that, like, a comic met a girl or woman that he really ended up with. He really liked it. You know, it's like they're like, oh, I'll just bang this comedian, and then that'll be that.
That's more of it. But I was there.
You know?
We just mentioned Lissa. Jamie Lissa was doing Premium Blend, maybe for Comedy Central. And I went with him, and Pete Lee was on the show also, and I was there the night he met his now ex-wife. That was the night he met his wife.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how long were they married?
I think like, I mean, Premium Blend.
Yeah.
That's been on
the
air for a few
ago.
Years.
Yeah, that's a while ago. Years. Yeah. So it does happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was just.
Pete Lee. I can't picture him.
Oh, yeah.
Jamie Lissa, I know.
Oh, you got to picture.
Lee's funny.
He's a beautiful man.
Yeah.
I have a picture with him and Adam Glenn from Voss's roast night last
month. Oh, I heard that was great.
So great.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just the two of them, and I just captioned it like heartthrobs of comedy. They're both just beautiful men. You know who I'm talking about? Adam Glenn? He's like a TMZ guy.
Yeah.
I know him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that dude.
Yeah. Google those two. But be careful. You might hand job yourself.
Right, exactly.
Is that a thing? Hand job yourself?
You could hand job yourself.
I think
it's called jerking off. Eh?
Yes.
There's already a term in place. Just thinking of colleges, my mind is still looking back. I remember I did, looking back to those, I did one, it was like St. Lawrence or something, upstate New York. I went in, everything looked great. It's in like what looks like a theater, kind of an amphitheater kind of thing. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a good one. There's a lot of kids in there. There's 300 kids, something like that. They're like, we only have one problem. I'm like, what's that? They're like, our sound system doesn't work. So now I have a theater full of kids, students, but I have no mic. No way. So I'm like, I can't just go up there and yell for an hour. My voice is going to be fucked. I can't do it. So it had this big, you know how an amphitheater sometimes has like this kind of shell-shaped back? I figured out that if I sat down at the bottom of that and faced it and just talked, they could all hear me.
Without away facing from them, though.
So I away did my entire set seated with my back to the crowd with my hands over, around my mouth like this. And that's how I did my whole show.
It's like so Andy Kaufman or something.
So weird. It felt like it. I was like, this is some weird alternative shit. But it worked.
I remember
facial expressions didn't go over so well.
Oh, yeah, that's like when there's no lighting halfway through, you're like, why aren't I getting a big response? Yeah. Oh, yeah, because they can't see my face.
Because they see this, they hear some shit. Yeah.
One time we were doing that kind of thing where we walked by like their nice little theater, like, oh, we just have this new theater build. It's wonderful. And that's not where you're doing your show.
Yeah. But, oh, my God, but you guys are next door.
You're in the cafeteria with the pool tables.
In the gym.
I had another time I opened for Brewer. We were at like, I want to say Dean College, somewhere in New England.
Dean College, yeah.
It was their like field house.
Uh-huh. Right.
And it was open to the town. And there were like 4,000 people.
Nice.
Something like that. But it was like right after security got tight. So they weren't well equipped to handle it. But they were like wanding everybody individually. And the show was so late. And there were so many people by the end. Like, they were so antsy for him.
Right.
And I was just supposed to do 10 minutes. There were people in the back that just thought I was Brewer. You know, they were yelling, go boy, at me. And just like, and I was up, you know, like when sometimes you're up there opening for somebody big and you're just like one time I opened for Norton and it was like right, like when Opie and Anthony was like just really booming, whip him out Wednesday, and just, you know what I mean? Just like, he didn't need an opener. And in my head, I'm like, I get it, but I got to do this. I got to be out here for 20 minutes. Let's just all get through this together. But then there's other times where you're like, you're going to want me back. You know, like you're opening for like, I won't say, but like somebody that they're like,
you're
going to
wish
enjoy
I was
this.
Here.
Yeah. But that was one of those things was like, I got to do this 10 minutes while these people are just like hating me with their eyes and stuff.
Oh, that's the worst.
Making money.
Yeah. But that one was okay because literally I think most of the people just thought I was Brewer until I brought up Brewer.
That's hilarious.
Get out unscathed.
But it took like, it was the show started like an hour and a half late because of the security stuff. So like, they're just angry.
Well, Brewer came in here and sat right where you are.
Oh, yeah.
And told a story about doing the gator growl with Attell. And they're supposed to be clean. And Brewer's got to close.
Yeah.
And Attell goes on and says, basically, fuck
cock.
You, Dean. This one's for the students. And he's just filthy. And then Brewer has to follow it clean. But Attell apparently didn't need the money, but Brewer did. So he had to try to follow dirty Attell by being clean.
First?
Yeah, that's a good point. But
I feel like if somebody could follow that, it would be Brewer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Dude.
He's like a rock star.
Yeah. Dude, I remember seeing him in the clubs.
Oh, yeah.
So fucking funny, man.
Because those times when I was opening for him, it was when he was transitioning to like all family stuff, talking to these like 17-year-old, 19-year-old kids, And, you know, of course, he's a celebrity, but that only lasts 15 minutes, yeah. 10 minutes. Like, yeah. They're on board with his stories.
Yeah.
About family life. It's, that's how good he is.
He's great. Really. He's a great performer, man. And a good, a really solid dude.
He did the story he told on here also about the gig in Mexico he did.
Yeah.
That thing was like a fucking movie. I mean, that thing, that was like a blockbuster. There were sound effects and it was like, yeah. You know.
And it's like a 40-minute story.
It was like 40 minutes long. Like, wow. Yeah.
I smoked weed a lot like in college and maybe the few years after, but. Not so much anymore, yeah. But one of those times that we were just in a parking garage in Philadelphia, and he's like, you want to smoke? And I'm like, yeah, how many times am I going to get to smoke with someone that's famous for smoking? But Brewer, like, that's the thing about those CDs and stuff. Like, there is a mentality, like, of a confidence thing that I remember seeing with Birbiglia.
Yeah, Birbiglia's got it.
Got that confidence, man, because one night, I think it might have been, like, the 20th or 25th, anniversary of the comic strip, they had like a lineup, and they had Brewer coming in to do like a half hour.
Oh, wow.
At like the peak time.
Oh, wow.
Crushes. Like, yeah. The two people that were after him like mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah. And, that's how it used to be when, like, Brewer was working the clubs. Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wanted to go on after him.
Yeah. And they were like, does anybody want to go on? Who can go? And Birbiglia, I mean, he was a newbie.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I'll do it. And he goes out there, and like, there's a pocket listening to him, and he's just like, at one point, he's just like, guys, I know I'm not Jim Brewer, but I'm pretty good too. And he got like a round of applause, and like, he just got them all on board. And I was like, holy shit, this kid has got something.
Huh. Wow, that's cool.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
He definitely does, and he did. I think there was definitely, when he first was in New York, he definitely rubbed a lot of people the wrong way,
yes,
Mike.
Yes.
And. But I think he's an okay dude.
He actually is. He's just, I just don't think he's, he's not socially squared up all the time. He just rubs people the wrong way, but not
intentionally.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And he has that confidence that...
scares people.
Will put people off. They'll be like, who the fuck does this guy think he is, you know? But, like I said, I think he's a good dude, Mike.
But I remember seeing you at the comic strip.
Yeah.
Like, I came from Boston where, like, you did a 10-minute set, and it was 10 minutes, and you were responsible for doing 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I remember being up in, like, Portland, Maine, which was, like, part of the New England thing, I was like, can somebody light me or something? And they were like, what are you going to do if you're on TV? And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure you go over your set with the producers,
and
so you don't
know exactly how much
that.
Time you'll be doing.
But it was that thing where you were just responsible for your set. But when I moved to New York, it was like, you're doing 10, which could be 8, it could be 17, because the host is hitting on somebody.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, and the other thing was like, you ended on a joke.
Mm.
If you were doing, but like, I saw you like crushing with crowd work once.
Oh, yeah.
And you were just like, all right, good night, because you got the light. And I was like, oh, yeah, you could just do that.
You could just leave.
Well, I just know so many people that would try to like follow that organic moment with like a joke and just kind of bomb and then be up there for like 5 more minutes trying to get
trying to get back to where you were. Yeah.
You know? And it was like eye-opening. There was like all those eye-opening things that happened to me in New York.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you had come from Boston.
Yeah.
Cool,
that's
man.
When
did you come down from Boston?
Right before September 11th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's all these other guys that came years before that.
Yeah.
Seemingly all at the same time.
Yeah,
like Bobby
Burr,
and Bill Burr.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who
Dane,
else.
Dane Cook, Patrice.
And yeah.
Then maybe Gullman.
Gary. Yeah. All those guys showed up. And we were like, these guys are funny. I wish they'd go the fuck back to Boston. You know? Of course, we all became friends later on and everything. But we definitely, the New York guys were like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I think Boston, I don't know how, if it's still like that, but at one point you could make a living in Boston as a comic and not have to leave Boston.
Doesn't seem like that's viable anymore, is it?
It's probably similar to The Road.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I guess you can make a living, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it really a good living? You know what I mean? It's just, it's like its own little microcosm of The Road.
Uh-huh.
So did you grow up there?
Yeah, I'm from Newton,
Mass.
Oh,
okay, cool.
Yeah.
Did you ever do the Hooky Lau?
The Hooky Lau in Chicopee?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's just the funniest gig.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. That's what I love about it. It's a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's called Western Mass. Lau.
I opened for Pauly Shore there, Bobby Collins. I actually just did it. Like, someone does a Wednesday there.
It's a fun gig. Yeah. There's a little house on the stage.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Like a prop house.
Attell's last, I think it was his Netflix special, where he has different clubs. He's from at different clubs. I think Hoogie Lau is one of them.
Oh, yeah. It's like
Oh, what, he jumps around from one club to the next through the same material?
Yeah.
That's like Chris... But
I don't,
did that.
No,
Chris Rock
I don't
did
know
that
if he did the same
different
material.
Material.
Yeah,
different
it was like
material.
It was like his like a show, but broken up in from different.
Oh,
places.
Okay, so like one bit or in one place, and then another. Okay, that's different.
So was that like a Lanny Clark?
No, it wasn't. There was a huge Chinese restaurant thing going on there. Yeah. There was like China Blossom in North Andover.
There were several. Right,
Nick's had Kowloon, which is still going like on its own. I think
there's
now.
Another one in Springfield.
Springfield
there
had
was a Chinese
Aku
restaurant
Aku.
That had. Yeah.
Yes. Because you would go by that. Oh, my God. Yeah. Because that was like right off the highway. You'd go by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was something in Brockton where I remember going down there and like kind of waiting around. And the woman was like, "Who are you? What do you want?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm one of the comics." She's like, "You don't look like a comic." I was like, "All right. Just bring me up."
You should have been like,
"What are you, retard?"
Thanks. I've seen a lot of comics. Thank you.
Yeah.
Last time I did a show in Boston, it was at the Wilbur Theater.
Oh, it's great.
And I literally said to my girlfriend beforehand, I was like, "This is going to be great. You know, theaters are always better than clubs. Crowds well behaved and blah, blah, blah." It was the worst. There was a fist fight broke out in the theater during my set. A man punched a woman in the face, and there was a brawl of like 8-on-8, and everyone got thrown. It was horrible. And then I tell people that story, people from Boston,
and
they're
like,
"Yeah, that's Boston.
Yeah, that's Boston for you." I never went to a Red Sox game growing up where I didn't see a fight.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's a tough town.
Yeah,
I never knew that so much until obviously I
was an
started going
town.
Up there and stuff. Yeah, people are pissed.
Yeah,
until Mocky Mock came
what.
Out of it, and you're like, "All
right, I really think it was when the Red Sox won.
Uh-huh.
That's when it sort of
here's
became
my theory.
A little nicer.
Wait, because there it's such a baseball town. I mean, Brady can do whatever he wants, but it wasn't until the Red Sox lifted that from the area. I think Philly is like that, but they're a football town.
Uh-huh.
When if the
right,
Eagles
if they win, then
I bet they'll
it'll
get
become
a little bit gentler.
A friendlier town.
Yeah.
That's a reasonable theory. I think there might be some truth to that.
Yeah.
Last time I was in Philly was at the Helium years ago. A huge fist fight breaks out.
I had that happen to me too at Helium.
Exit of the club, right by the exit, there was a wedding party, and somebody invited the ex-wife or something. So she, slaps the new bride to be. This whole huge fist fight breaks out, and they didn't have much security that night, so we were just trapped. You couldn't leave. We were just trapped. There was this huge table of people just fighting and whatever. So I just narrated the fight. I
was awesome.
Like Jim Lampley, you know, I was up there. It was great, man.
Oh, let's get ready to rumble.
I had a puker from a bachelor or bachelorette party at Helium, which I ended up getting like blamed somehow for. There was like a guy from like one of those magazines, you know, that Dylan guy. I don't know.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think it was like the late show, and he wrote something.
Wrote some article about the
and then
person
the
whole, threw
it was
up.
July 4th weekend.
So
right.
funny. Jonathan Fish is so funny. The woman throws
No, because it was an awful show. Like, they got kicked out, but they were heckling the whole time. And, like, somehow, like, I got blamed by the owner for it. Yeah, that was fun.
That sucks. I was at Helium in Philly one time. I think I might have told this story on the show, but Cash Cab was kind of at its peak, and people would get crazy when I came out.
Like, they couldn't get a joke out crazy?
Couldn't say anything. Like, they were just yelling shit out and cheering and screaming, like, going nuts. Totally new for me. Like, holy shit, what the fuck is this? Screaming red light challenge and video bonus and just yelling cash cab and just screaming and just going fucking crazy. They've been quiet. They've been a great crowd for the MC and the middle. And then all fucking hell breaks loose. Some of them definitely expected me to be doing cash cab live in the club.
That's hilarious.
But so this particular night, I come out. It's the same scenario. Everything's great until I get introduced. I get introduced. The place goes fucking apeshit. One table in the front is making so much noise that the table next to them starts telling them to shut the fuck up. And within 30 seconds of me coming out on the stage, I haven't even started yet. There's a full-on brawl. 15, 16 guys punching each other in the face. And I'm just standing there like, what the fuck is going on?
DC comes out and narrates it.
DC comes out and he's like, Anna, left, left, uppercut.
Combinate. You got to combinate.
So finally, like 12 Philly police officers come in, just march in the back door and fucking drag everybody out. And now there's just this huge empty space in the front of the room. And the rest of the crowd is just sitting there looking at me. And so I just like did my set as best I could and got through it. But it was a mess. It was a fucking mess,
man. Was it like that in the city, too?
Not so much. Okay. With people going crazy, getting excited. Like, no. They would get excited. And they still sometimes do.
Yeah, they sure do.
And I don't always expect it anymore. And so I'm always like, okay. I forgot, you know, that they actually get excited about me, especially with everybody that drops in all the time at the cellar. But they always would get excited and yell and cheer, but then listen in the city. Then they want to hear my act. They you know, it's like, it was just different on the road. And Philly was more like the road in that sense. But, yeah, man, it's crazy, the shit that goes on and these, you know, this job of ours.
Oh, God. Yeah, no shit.
On any given night.
Yeah, shit.
I remember going back to Boston. I remember going up and doing, you know Stephen Donovan?
Oh, yeah.
Stephen used to do, he's like, I know it sounds terrible, but it's really good. He goes, I got a gig. I got a show that I produce at a truck stop. And I'm like,
Sturbridge,
oh,
Mass.
Oh, boy. That sounds right. Yeah, that's the one.
I think so.
So I was like, all right, fuck it, because he's my good buddy. And I'm like, fuck it, I'll do it. I go up there, and I can't remember the guy who was on the show with us, but all I remember is that he was doing all these weird, silly impressions. And he's like, I just remember him going, this is Neil Diamond as a cow. And then he's like, hello. It's Donovan and I could not stop laughing about that for years after that. I'd call him and just be like, hello. So fucking funny.
About Donovan, Steve, we played softball. We were on the Gotham softball team.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I played in some of those games. Yeah,
and he was just so happy. I think he was one of the few guys that like maybe was temping or something, and so he was literally leaving his office to go play because he would sit in right field or left field or wherever he was, and he would just yell, people are in offices right now. We're having fun.
I could see him just really, really loving that. Yes. Yeah. Those were fun, man.
Yeah.
I had a good time doing that. Huh. Not just because I would hit a home run almost every time I was up.
Oh, we needed you.
I had to stop playing, though, because it ruined my golf swing.
Really?
Yeah. I couldn't play softball one day and then golf the next. It was like a weird switch. I couldn't do it.
Huh. No, Lenny was in charge.
Those were fun. Yeah, Lenny was there.
He's the manager. Marcus,
yeah.
Leonard Marcus. And I remember the umpires getting way too into it.
Yes.
Like, just running such a tight ship and, like, kicking people out of the game and, like, kicking dirt on each other. And, like, I'm like, dude, it's a bullshit little comedy club league. What are you, calm down. And then guys are, I remember, I think Mazzilli was there, almost getting in a fight with the umpire.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Did he have a suit on? It's a Canali suit.
Fucking Mazzilli. What a character, man. Always fixing his tie in the mirror.
Yeah.
Straightening his suit jacket.
He's been more casual lately.
Really?
Oh, has he? I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah. You know, that'll happen.
Was a comic.
Yeah.
He used to do that monkey bit. He did this bit about a monkey, and he'd go up act like a fucking chimp and be like, ooh, 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 and go around. I used to see him at New York Comedy Club doing this monkey bit. And then I remember years later, I had a bit about Times Square changing, and Mickey Mouse being out on the corner, suck your dick for some cheese or something.
I remember
like
that bit.
And then Mozilla came up and he was like, you know, you really shouldn't do that. That's kind of dirty. I'm like, dude, you did the fucking monkey bit. You did the monkey bit. Don't tell me about the, you acted it out for like 5 minutes, the monkey.
There was definitely a different way because like I never was there when he was a comedian.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, I wondered. I thought you came after that.
A different way you guys... He would interact with you guys, like, and Ted, the people that were like,
no, guys that
comedy.
Were around. Yeah. It's like we knew his secret.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, so that limited his power.
Yeah.
It's totally true, man.
It was so funny to see him because he did it the last time I saw it was at the old Gotham. And it was the last time I saw him do stand up. And he's up there and he was transitioning into the suits and everything. So he had the shirt and tie on. But the blazer was like hanging on the chair, and he's up there like. Ooh, ooh, ah, ooh.
Did he still have his pretty. Rat tail?
I don't know if he had the
he had a rat,
rat
tail.
He had a rat tail when he was still in stand up. He used to wear a varsity jacket.
Oh yeah,
with pins buttons on it.
Wow.
And he had a rat tail.
Ah,
that Judah was, tells a great
that's
story
the secret that you guys
about
have.
How somebody came up to him and they were like, "What's with the buttons?" And Mozilla was like, every one of these buttons means something. And he broke it down. Judah would know the whole thing. But.
He's like, I'm going to buy this club.
One of my favorite, yeah, right? One of my favorite, I used to love the old Gotham. It was yeah, like so my much. Favorite
oh,
room.
It was my first club.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Oh.
It's actually random that you brought up Stephen Donovan. He went to Syracuse with like my ex-girlfriend from high school. And when I started doing comedy, she put me in touch with him.
Oh, so okay.
I was like, I mean, this was probably before email. No, it wasn't before. Yeah, I must have emailed him and been like, before I ever met him.
Right.
And he set me up with Karen Berggren.
Berggren.
Oh, yeah. Karen Berggren.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
And she had like a bringer show on before their regular show. And
oh, I remember
they let
that.
You stay
yeah.
for the regular show. And I saw like Wally and Judah before he was the world champion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wally. Wally's a great dude.
Yeah. So what is Wally? He's got some show he's doing now.
Oh, yeah. The it's sort of game show kind of thing.
Yes.
Oh, that's
it's
cool.
A stand-up thing. I don't know.
I remember I went into the SAG office in New York one time, and Wally was behind the desk. And I was like, holy shit, what are you doing? And he just made nothing of it.
Yeah.
You know, you ever like randomly run into someone like that, and you're kind of shocked, and they're just like, whatever. I guess he was working there for a while. I don't know. But
that was always my fear with online dating, that somebody in the audience would see me and be like, I saw you on Tinder.
Yeah. Right.
I had to get over that, though.
Get over that fear.
Yeah.
I love that old Gotham.
Oh, my God.
Couple of funny stories from there. One time, William Stevenson was hosting, and I came running in from the cellar. I used to go back and forth and do like four a night. At each club on the weekends. And I had to go to the bathroom. I had to take a shit really badly. And I ran in and I told William, I said, I gotta run and use the bathroom. Don't, you know, I need a few minutes. And he was like, And I went in the bathroom and I just fully committed. And that fucker, I hear him saying my name from the stage. I had to like and fucking yank my pants up and run onto the fucking stage. I'm like, you asshole. He's just laughing. You motherfucker.
They used to have that show there, New Joke City.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. I did that.
I did the first episode of that.
Oh, nice.
And I never got it. I don't think I got a copy of it, but I did. It was fucking awesome, man. I love that little room.
I loved it. Yeah. I had such great shows in there.
Yeah.
Did I tell the story about The Fly?
The Fly?
Dude, one night I was on stage at the old Gotham, and the whole time I'm up there, there's this sort of haggard fly, this big sort of horse fly thing, you know, about as wide as a quarter, buzzing around. You know, you're way up high in that room. The stage is very high, so the crowd is kind of at your feet. This fly is buzzing around like chest level, so 5 feet above the crowd's heads. But it's big, and it's not flying well, so it's noisy.
Yeah, yeah.
And after maybe 5 minutes, everybody's aware of this fly. And it keeps going like toward the back, toward that little balcony, and then it'll turn around and fly back toward the front. And then so it's just doing laps, basically. And then so I finally I'm like, I have to say something about this fucking fly. So I start talking to the fly. And I'm like, would you quit flying in circles and fucking up my show? Just get the fuck out of here already. You're going to die if you stay in here for another. You know, I can't remember what I'm saying, but I'm talking to the fly. As I'm talking to it, I'm getting big laughs. Everybody's watching it. It's flying around. It's flying around. It's to my left. I'm talking to it. I'm like, get the fuck out. I point toward the curtain, toward the front. I'm like, just fly the fuck out of here. And the fly is going toward the curtain. It's going toward the curtain. And I'm like, that's right. Get the fuck out. The fucking thing turns around. Everybody's watching it. I swear to God, it sounds made up, but this really fucking happened. And anybody who was there would remember it. The people working there, you know. This fucking fly turns around and flies right at me. It's flying straight at me. And I'm like, holy shit, he's coming right for me. He heard me. He's flying. The fucking thing flew right into my forehead.
Really?
Smashed into my forehead while I'm talking about it. And the place went fucking crazy. I just said goodnight. Like, everyone was cheering. Half the crowd was on their feet. It was unbelievable. I'm talking shit to this fly, and it just fucking kamikaze me and flew right into my face.
Everybody's like, Bailey's a prop comic.
What are you, using insects now? Write a joke. It was so crazy, man. And then I was listening to, I think it was on NPR, where they're interviewing Lily Tomlin.
Yeah.
And she told a story about how she was doing a show somewhere, and there's a fly buzzing around, and she starts talking to the fly, and it fucking flies right at her. Same exact fucking thing. I heard that one day when I was driving the car, years after it happened to me. I'm just like, that is so bizarre.
Oh, shit.
Pretty weird, right?
What did you have any... what were your other jobs that you did? Like, when you came to New York, you didn't just do comedy. Did you do some other...
Well, I got sort of lucky in New York.
Uh-huh.
But in Boston, I was... I worked on a psych ward out of college.
Oh,
wow.
And then I worked on a nutrition clinic when I was like, I got to not work nurse's hours anymore.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was deciding to move to New York or L.A., when I did a week in L.A., my boss called me and told me, if you can wait till March or April, I can get you laid off. So I kind of got laid off.
And then you get unemployment.
Moved here, got unemployment, didn't have to worry about the health insurance quite as quickly as I might have.
That's sweet.
Yeah. That's cool. So you were a nurse.
I was a mental health counselor. It was basically, though, we were like nurses without handing out the drugs.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
man.
It was like the evolution of the white jacket orderly thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So what was your job? Like
I mean, we just did everything from like, help the kids in school to, assist them in like meetings with their therapists and parents meetings and, doing our own groups, taking them to the gym or like teaching. Like I actually did when I started doing stand up, me and the rec therapist did a stand up show with them where they tried to come up with a joke. If they couldn't, we picked one out of, I think it was like Rosie O'Donnell's joke book and we would tape them and then they would watch it. And it was like, these kids were,
oh, you had them, the
yeah, the kids.
They must have loved that, though.
They did, although it's like if we started with 10, only like 6 made it to the recording.
To where they would actually record it? That's
yeah,
pretty good, though.
People flipping out and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, it was, yeah.
Fear of
so that kind
speaking.
Of thing. No, like they had a meltdown.
Okay. Yes.
What happens when one of them has a meltdown?
Well, that's why I was listening to Vecchione's stories and like it was like that kind of thing. Like we're like, well, first I worked at
Vecchione showed up. He ran in wearing a cape and tackled them.
First I worked at Westwood Lodge, which was a zoo. That was not a safe place.
Wow.
And I worked with kids, but every unit there was like maybe 2 kids units, 2 adolescent units, and 2 adult units, like of different levels of severity or like, a day floor or something like that. So every unit had 1 person per shift that was on emergency call. So if somebody was acting up, there'd be a full hospital-wide emergency call and that 1 person would go. And I was like usually one of the only guys on my floor, so I was pretty much always that emergency guy. Gotcha. So if you're working with these kids and you have to restrain them, they know you're in it to help them.
Yeah.
And that this is part of the job. But when you just leave your floor to go restrain somebody and that's your only relationship with these people, there was this one kid. He was
scary
adolescent.
For them, right?
It was scary. And it was just like,
and for you.
That's all they know of you. It's like, here comes that guy. He's going to restrain me. And there was one time it was just like a Benetton ad of restrainers. It was like a black guy, a Spanish guy, me. And he was just, this kid was just yelling at us like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to get you. You fucking this, you fucking that. Like, honky hung. And like, and that was like, we'd restrain him and then it'd be like, okay, see ya. And that was it. And then I saw him in my neighborhood months later at a Brugger's Bagels.
Oh, those bagels. That's the great equalizer right there.
And I was like, well, here we go.
Did this he recognize
you? He did. And he was like, just gave me a little wave. So it was like, he knew that I was just doing my job.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But you were like, uh-oh, I might have
I
to
was
roll
like,
with this
could
dude.
Happen.
You didn't put the extra hurting on him or whatever. You
no,
know? Yeah.
No.
Oh, that's
funny. You just reminded me, kind of unrelated. When I was in college, the guys that I went to college with, everybody got in fights. We got in fights all the time. It was like our fun. We'd go out, we'd drink and get in fist fights. Pretty cool, huh? But there was like a couple
kinda,
of...
Kinda, I know you're...
Yeah, you know, I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
But yeah.
Yeah, kinda. But it doesn't lead to a good place.
Right.
It ended up... shitty, awful in the end, but everyone survived. But there was like a couple of guys who were kind of on the outskirts of it, who wanted to be kind of part of it, but it wasn't in them. They didn't have it in their hearts to be that guy. And one of them was one of my best friends, and he was always like, you guys are always getting in fights, and it's, you know, he's like, I'm never there, and I just want to do it once. I just want to do it one time just to see what it's like, just to feel it. And I'm like, well, it'll probably just happen. You don't have to go looking for it. And he's like, and he's getting drunk, and he's a guy who doesn't drink much. And he's got like 3 or 4 beers in him, which is like usually his max.
Uh-huh.
And we're at a party with a bunch of dudes that we don't know. Some girl invited one of us, and a bunch of us went. So he's kind of got his sights on this kid at this party, and he's like, I'm gonna fight this kid. And we're like, dude, you don't have to. Fights happen. You don't just decide to fight a guy for no fucking reason. And I'm like, and your heart isn't in this.
Unless you're from Philly.
At some point, unless you're at Helium in Philly, at some point it'll happen. If you really want to do it, whatever. Hanging out with this group's gonna happen. There's no talking him out of it. He decides he wants to fight this fucking guy. So he basically says to him, let's go outside, you and me. Over nothing.
Yeah.
There's no reason to fight. And the kid just goes, okay. And we're all like, uh-oh. This isn't good. We're not going to do. I mean, this guy didn't do anything. Yeah. It's not like we're all going to jump in.
Yeah.
And my friend, we get outside, and my friend just puts his hands up.
Like the old Irish.
Like a pugilist.
Yeah, pugilist.
Like we called him the pugilist after this. He's a pugilist. Except he wasn't a pugilist. He didn't have the skills. He just put his hands up like this, and then the other dude just punched him in the face like 8 times, and he fell down, and that was it. And we were like, why did you do that? And he's like, I don't know. But I just had to do it. I felt like I had to do something, you know, whatever. So the part that reminded me of it is that like 2 days after that, we go to the local grocery store where we always shop, and there's the fucking kid is the cashier. And we're in his line. And he looks up and sees us, and he just goes white. He thinks we've come there to exact our revenge. But no, we just bought our shit and left.
Bread.
That was it. We just bought like 3 items and we were on our way.
It was more hurtful for him to have to ring you up.
Yeah, totally. Oh, it was awful for him. I'm like, this isn't fair. He didn't do anything and this is terrible for him now. It was awful for him then, even though he won the fight.
Yeah.
The whole thing was so stupid.
Oh, wow.
But he just wanted to like...
Yeah.
So his fighting oats.
You should have just punched him in the face when he said that.
I want to fight. I'm like,
boom.
Bam. There. Now you fought.
That's what it feels like.
That's what it feels like. It fucking hurts.
Yeah. That's definitely something you're cut out for or not, I think. You know?
And I feel like I wasn't really cut out for it, but I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of misplaced rage and hurt from when I was a kid. So that came out and it was an outlet. for me.
Yeah, I feel like
boy,
that
had some
too.
Crazy nights.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of anger that comes out, but it I don't know, it takes a lot to get it out. For me, it takes a lot to really push me to the.
Me too.
Thing,
me too. You know? It didn't. It took a while to get there.
Yeah.
To be able to control it, because that's a problem with losing your temper. By the time you realize it's too late, you already lost your temper. So I had to train myself to see it coming. And go, if this is happening or this is happening, here's a list of things. If any of these are happening, let alone if more than one of them is happening, you're about to lose it and you have to step away from whatever's going on.
I've had that with stand-up.
And then it
like
worked.
Reminding me when you were saying that you narrated that fight, I get to a point, like I also have a high threshold for nonsense from the audience, but when I get there, I'm not a comic anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes,
and
I do.
And I'm just like, and so like if I'm just doing a set, I'll wait it out.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, this didn't turn out well, but you got more comedy to go, and I just wait for the light. But if I'm headlining a show, I make them remove the people.
Yeah. Right.
And I'll do that too, the thing where you narrate. I'm like, I know this is awkward.
Yeah.
But I've done this before.
Yeah. We're going to get through.
Yeah,
it's going to be better on the other end.
Yeah. Because I know when I get there, like, there's no funny coming out. It's just going to be...
it just gets ugly.
I'm just going to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, often for me, when that happens, I feel terrible, but the crowd loved it.
Right.
If I just ream some assholes out, the crowd's like, that was awesome. I'm like, but I feel empty inside. That's not what this is supposed to be, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, too, like there's like something you can say. Like the audience thinks it's all fun and games until you say, like you call them a retard or you do something that's over the line where they're like, oh.
Yeah, then the whole room shifts.
Yeah.
And
then
you're in a different spot.
Yes.
Everything's different.
Yeah.
Have you ever had, again, this is kind of slightly off topic. Have you ever had a moment on stage where you feel a shift like that in the room, but it's not because of what you did?
Shift in the room.
A shift, like, it happened to me two weeks ago. I'm on stage. This is at the cellar, the regular cellar room, McDougal Street room. I'm killing for like 8 minutes. And I'm in the middle of this new bit about how I look like a gym teacher. And I say that. That's the kind of the beginning of it. It goes from this guy trying to sell me weed. I'm like, besides, why would you try to sell me weed? I look like a gym teacher. Usually gets a big laugh. That night I said that, and I don't know what happened. The whole room changed. And then it was like they couldn't hear me after that. I'm realizing now that maybe someone else
had said
something about a gym teacher beforehand.
That's immediately what I went to. Yeah.
Yeah. That seems like the only possibility. Yeah. It's just so weird. I was just so confused by it.
Yeah.
If it happens consistently, then you're like, maybe that gym teacher joke, maybe there's something. But you know how it is.
It's killed every time, except for that one.
Go on before talking about some pedophile gym teacher that, you know.
Oh, that's another, you just reminded me of another funny story. One night I ran in, I was running late. I run into the cellar, I run down the steps, and I'm standing in the hallway. And Jimmy Norton's on stage. And he says he was doing, I might have told this, man, this is getting bad. I might have told this already. He was doing his monster reign.
You need an intern.
We need someone to keep track. You're absolutely right. He's doing it, getting ready to tape his monster reign special, which he would say, when I was in second grade, my good friend and I, if it started raining, we'd run, we'd say, oh, it's the monster reign. And we'd run under the deck and suck each other's dicks. And this woman just goes, oh, my God, in the crowd. And everybody groans. And Jimmy goes, come on. He's like, second grade is not too early. And the woman goes, yes, it is. And the crowd would sort of generally was like, yeah, that's fuck. What the fuck, dude? It's second grade. And it's kind of ugly. And he's like, he gets mad at them and basically tells them to fuck off and he leaves. And then I got to go up next.
Jesus.
I can't remember who was hosting it. They bring me up and I go, come on, you guys, give it up for Jimmy Norton. He's okay. He's a good friend of mine. I've known him since second grade. But I was sweating. That was one of those where I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do to get out of this until I got up there, and then it just kind of came out, you know, when you don't know what it's going to be until it's happening.
Yeah. that's great.
So many great moments, man.
Yeah.
In this job of ours, there's plenty of those crazy, awful things that we've talked about, but there's also just these so many amazing little things. And I'll tell you what's been one of my favorite things of late is watching guys that I've known in stand-up for years really sort of hit their stride.
Yeah.
Lenny Marcus is a perfect example.
Yeah.
I always liked what Lenny did, but lately I'm just like, holy shit, look at Lenny, man.
Yeah.
He's just killing. Yeah.
Coryelli had that too when he was, you know, because he moved and then he.
Right, yeah, he's gone for a while, yeah.
Writing for the Kevin James show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was just in, you know, waiting, you know, right outside the opening at the Cellar, and he was just like, damn, Lenny got good. Damn it.
Yeah.
Brother, he got good. I can't pull my Coryelli right
it's
now.
It's hard to do. It's a very high pitched.
Right.
You have to have a very narrow head.
Doing it. Very thin head, and then, yeah.
See this guy right there? Fucking Lenny Marcus. But yeah, it was just like, yeah, so I'm sure you guys, like you're probably the same age, but he might have started after you guys.
Lenny?
Yeah.
I think Lenny probably started around the same time
I
did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And I'm not saying he wasn't good before, but like he's just sort of found a spot that's like.
Well, that's another thing if you think about it.
It's cool, man. It's like, we've been at it for a long time.
And nobody has been at it this long.
Yeah.
The way.
Right.
You guys, and then like, you know, I think I'm probably like a generation behind, but like how long have you been doing it? 20 years?
30 in October.
Yeah.
Holy
it's
shit.
It's like nobody's been doing comedy like we do.
I'm 20.
For 30 years.
24 years.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
24? I thought you do as long as.
Mm-mm. Wow. 93. December of 93, I started.
Okay.
I'm almost at 18.
This well, you know, man.
But it's, you know what I mean? So, like, we're getting bet. It's like.
You're just old, dude.
I am fucking old. That's what it is, man.
I had to make light. You look like you were genuinely getting upset.
No, I was just like, God damn, I don't know. You know. But then, you know, there's always somebody who's been doing it longer, and there's always whatever. But there's. And then sometimes I feel like, you know, it's like there's these times you've been doing it this long, but are you getting any better?
Yes,
am I getting any
that's
better?
That's the thing.
Right.
That's the hard part. Is
you need to feel like you're getting better, yeah. You know, like you're making progress.
Have I held myself back or, you know, like then I have those moments where I'm like, I'll do in this chunk, like a story, and I'm like, that's what I've wanted to do all this time. All this time, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to recreate when I was sitting around with my friends, telling them a story, and then we'd be out somewhere and they'd be like, oh, tell that guy. Tell my other friend that thing and then you're, you know, that's what I wanted to recreate on stage, which is seemed like an impossibility.
Right. But it takes 10 years to be yourself on stage.
Oh, man. It took
that's
me forever.
That's what they always say. It takes 10 years to find your voice, but it's not your voice. It's 10 years to be comfortable enough to be yourself.
Yeah. You ever have like an audience member? They often, as we mentioned earlier, say stupid things and they come up and say offensive things. But once in a while, one of them will say something kind of profound and insightful.
Yeah.
I had this guy come up to me. I can't remember even where I was, but I had a great show. And I got to this point, and I didn't realize it then, but now I'm aware of it when it's happening, that I realized I wasn't doing planned bits. And I wasn't doing crowd work. I was just talking. I was just saying things that I think and you know, and this guy recognized it and came up to me afterward and said, it was a pleasure to watch. He goes, "You, I don't know how long you've been at this, but clearly it's a long time because you're at the point now that not a lot of people get to where you're just talking, you're just being you, and you're just talking to the crowd. And a lot of people probably couldn't even tell the difference." He goes, "But I saw it, and I want to let you know." And I was like, "Holy shit!"
Yeah, that's the best kind of compliment.
You know
so
who notices
good.
Things like that? Ed, you know Ed Kavanaugh. He used to be at
Rascals, yeah, I remember Ed.
And now he's a manager at Gotham, and he notices that he'll say things to you that you're like, because he's like a fan. He's rooting for you.
He works with a production company too, doesn't he?
I'm not sure.
I remember him because he kind of looks like the guy that was on that show, Ed.
No.
No?
No.
Oh, maybe I'm mixing him up.
Different guy, yeah.
Maybe I'm mixing him up then.
Wait, not Tom Cavanaugh. You're saying he looks like Tom Cavanaugh, Ed?
Oh, I thought you were saying a guy. Wait, who are you talking about?
Which
Ed,
Cavanaugh?
He used to be. Well, because Ed from the show, his name is Tom Cavanaugh, I believe.
Right. Right. Okay.
So this guy, Ed Cavanaugh, I believe is his name. He used to work at Rascals.
They even had the same last name?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I was talking about those. I thought those two guys looked alike. That is fucking weird. But I never knew they both had the last name, too.
He makes observations, you know, whatever he looks like, because I can't picture his face now.
But he'll say something to you after, and you're like, oh, thanks, man.
That's nice.
That's cool. That's really nice, when someone really understands and appreciates. Yeah.
Even Sean, who booked there forever, he's still booking. Yeah. He's not managing there anymore. Uh-huh. He likes comedy in that way, and he'll notice something. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sean Flynn.
Yeah.
He sent me a nice email about storytelling.
Yeah.
Like he likes, he's a good dude.
Remember when he was whitening his teeth?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about that.
He would drink coffee through a straw.
Oh, no.
Remember that?
No. I'll have to tease him about that when I see him.
Yeah, it's funny. He was always walking around sipping coffee through a straw. I'm like, coffee with a straw? He's like, I'm whitening my teeth.
Did he have those plastic things on? Those things where you talk like this?
I don't think so. But he's trying to drink coffee without touching his teeth with it.
That's great. That's great, dude. I got to ask him how his teeth are doing next time I see him. Looking kind of gray there, a little.
No, I saw him the other night. He looks really good.
He looks like Peter North.
Yeah, he does look like Peter North. He does look like Peter North, who looks like, who's the guy we were just talking about, that announcer, Michael Buffer.
Michael Buffer,
Michael Buffer, Peter North.
Yeah, you said Jim Lampley, but Michael Buffer,
that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Michael Buffer is the, let's get ready to rumble.
Oh, yeah, and that's all, you know,
he comes out in his tux and he's got the, you know.
There's also a French newscaster who looks like those guys.
Who's that?
I don't know his name, but he looks like those three guys do. They're all from the same mold.
It's a common look. Oh, shit.
Wow, man. Well, this has been great, man. This is a fun episode. We talked about a lot of different stuff.
We did.
Yeah.
But it was cool, man.
We called this episode Bits and Pieces.
Bits and Pieces. A lot covered, man. Bits of fish.
Yeah.
So what do you got coming up, Mr. Fish? You want to plug something?
Well,
what's your website and your social media?
Yeah, my website is johnfish.com, JONFISCH. I'm over at Johnny Fish, JONNY, on Twitter.
Johnny Fish.
And I started a new podcast called Spiraling Up.
Awesome.
Spiraling Up. Oh, that sounds cool.
Yep. And I've got if you're in the Rockland County, Westchester area, doing a big benefit for aneurysm awareness on September 15th, Tom Cotter headlining.
Nice.
Tom Cotter.
Yeah.
More
yeah.
jokes per minute than any other comedian.
Else. Yeah.
He's got so many fucking jokes.
That's rapid how I outro
fire. Oh, really?
I outro him something like that. Like, yeah, you're not going to get more jokes per minute.
More. I remember, you remember Jordan Rubin? Do you ever know him? He might have been, he was around for a little bit when you
I
were.
I knew him because my friend knew him from just like New York City.
Right.
Because he grew up there.
Yeah, he grew up in New York. Yeah. And he knows a ton of people and everything.
I think his dad invented like easy, wider
paper. He did.
Paper or
he did, yeah.
Wow. He's one of those guys. I'm like, where is he?
He's a writer.
He moved to LA.
Yeah.
He moved to LA, yeah. But so I'm sitting at I think it was at the Cellar, maybe the old Boston with Jordan and Tom Cotter. And Jordan says, no, it was out in front of the Cellar. And Jordan says to Cotter, you know, if you just slowed down a little bit, you'd have like 10 hours of material. And I laughed, and Cotter looked like he wanted to kill him. He was so pissed. He was like, don't you get it? This is what I do, you know?
Yeah.
That's my act.
Yeah.
It was fucking funny as hell, man.
But that's one of those things. When he did America's Got Talent, you saw a guy who was just like good, such a professional. That I think one of the things he did was like he just put a bunch of categories up on the screen and let them pick it.
Yeah.
And then he
like,
did the
that's
jokes.
That's how much material this man has, you know, made over the years that he can make it look like he's just doing this.
Yeah.
We should get him on the show. He's a great comic. He's a good dude, too.
Yeah.
He's got a ton of stories.
That crew really helped me transition to New York, like him and Al.
And Al,
and Vic by. Hanley? Association.
Vic Hanley.
Vic was literally Hanley. Like, Tom Cotter likes you, I like you.
Yeah.
Hanley's a great dude. He's been on here a couple times, too.
Oh, man, that's a
so many great guys.
Repository of stories right there.
Oh, my God, yeah. Vic Hanley.
God dang, Nantucket's own.
Yeah. The first time I did a, one of the first times I did a college, I was open, I opened for Carr. Yeah. And we smoked so much weed in the car. I was like, I can't. He was like, grow a dick and smoke some dope. He said it like 10 times. He kept forcing a hit on me. And by the time we walked into the school, I was just like, what the fuck? I was so out of it. And I had to open the show. So I went up. Somehow I had a good set. I was just so programmed and doing so many sets at the time that it didn't matter. I could just go up and do it whenever, you know. But while I was on stage, Cotter went into my, we each had a dressing room. He went into my dressing room and piled all the furniture, turned it upside down and stacked it all up really high. And then I didn't go in there after my set. I introduced him and I stayed and watched him. And then I went and got food and then I came back. And he's just looking at me with this weird look on his face. And I'm like, I'm just going to grab my bag. And he's like, okay. And I just go and I open the door to my dressing room and my bag's right inside the door. I just grab it and I shut the door and I come out and he goes, did you even look in there? And I'm like, no, what? He's like, go back and open the door. I go back, I turn the light on. Oh, shit's stacked up. It's stacked up. I don't know how. He's like the shortest dude. Somehow he had, my furniture was stacked up like 10 feet high and I didn't even fucking notice. So I kind of got back on him, you know, without, because I didn't even see it. But I was like, this dude's funny and this is going to be a fun life. You know, I was so new at that time.
Something.
Yeah.
Something else.
All right, another great episode of Tall But True. Woo. Big thanks to John Fish.
John Fish in the house.
Go to therealbenbailey.com to see where I will be. Please subscribe to Tall But True if you haven't already. You guys can catch me at the Funny Bone in Syracuse, October 20th and 21st. Let's go back a little bit. Starland Ballroom in Sayreville, New Jersey, September 29th. Treehouse Comedy Club, Westport, Connecticut, September 23rd. I'm going backwards. September 1st, Laughs by the Lake. At Lake Carolyn in Irving, Texas. And that's enough for now. DC, what do you got, man?
I'm just going to keep it easy. The real DC Benny on Instagram, and I'll just post dates on there because I can never remember them. I never write them down and bring them, although there aren't nearly that many.
I have so many that I'm like, why did I book so much fucking work? I'm tired. I'm exhausted just reading the list. I gotta fly to all these fucking places.
And we have our show at the Fat Black Pussycat, our monthly the Tall But True Live storytelling show. So you guys got to, you know, check that out.
August 9th, and then do we have a September date yet?
No, I'm working on that, man.
All right. I'm gonna look forward. It'll be maybe the second Wednesday in September, Tall But True Live. Same concept as this show, comedians telling great stories. So come check it out. Thanks for listening to Tall But True, guys. More great episodes to come.